This is Kevin Doherty, your host for Just Thinking. I am the Chief Strategy Officer for 806 Technologies. And today I have a very special guest to share with you. His name is Charles Hamm. Charles and I met in conversations on LinkedIn. I was really intrigued by what he has accomplished in his life, especially recently. And I'm going to let Charles tell you a little bit more about himself. So Charles, tell us about who you are.
Well, my name's Charles Hamm, and I'm retired. And I'm trying to think of a good place to start biographically. My adult career my adult life started in the Marine Corps back in the 60s. And after I got out of the Marine Corps, I was served 4 years. I went to college on the GI Bill and majored in, as we were talking about, I majored in classical Greek and Hebrew. But I wanted to be an archaeologist, but three kids and the demands of life kind of put all of that on hold. And I became just an entrepreneur, living by my wits, started different businesses. And that's what I did throughout my life. Always had a passion for learning. I'm writing my third book right now. Wow. And it's the working title of it right now is Refusing God in Our Knowledge. Hmm. And it's I've had an interest in ancient history, and I learned early in my studies that there's more to history than just reading about the events of history. History is biology also, geology, geography, astronomy. I mean, all of these things factor in. And I had this passion for just to know what was going on. And so I feel like I'm more of a self-educated man than anything. When I was a little boy, my mother would sit me on her lap and read the Childcraft Encyclopedia to me.
Remember it well.
And I was interested in it. You know, the animals, you know, over in Africa and all of these different things that I saw. And I'd point out what I was interested in, and she would read it to me. And I never lost that childhood curiosity. To this day, I'm just wanting to learn and understand. But when I retired, that was a quick overview of my life. But I retired when I was 74. It was just time, and turned the business over to the kids. And I was sitting on a cabin porch up at my property and just kind of thinking about things and watching the hummingbirds and already getting a little bored with retirement. I'd always been so active. For the first month or two, it was kind of nice not having anything to do. But then that started getting old, and I felt like I needed something. And I'd been on LinkedIn, and I was just an observer and posted a few things now and then. But one of the things that I kind of realized was it seemed like no matter what side of the political spectrum you came down on or what your views were on different social issues, it seemed like everybody was mad. Nobody's happy. Everybody, right? You listen to them, what they write. I mean, everybody was mad. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, I'm not mad. And I had this moment in time when something just down inside of me felt like I had something to say. It was that simple. I felt like I had something to say. And so I did a post on LinkedIn and I just gave a different way of looking at things on a particular subject. I just write what I thought and what I had to say. And this started catching on. And people were saying a lot of really nice things about my view. And I could tell I was getting people to think. And yes. I used the word ponder and pilgrims. Pondering to me is thinking on a little higher level. I mean, that's the way I define it to myself. And it pilgrims, I meant nothing negative about it. Like in some of the old Western movies, they use it kind of as a derogatory term. But my idea was, and I explained it, life is a pilgrimage. Pilgrimage is you start out somewhere and you're on a journey to somewhere else.
Right.
And that's life. And so I started calling my followers pilgrims, and they seemed to like it. You know, they got a kick out of it. And so I'm developing a following now on LinkedIn. I'm up over 26,000 followers now. I just would keep, I kept writing, and people were, they kept reading. And so one day someone said, Mr. Charles, you need to write a book. And I hadn't really thought about it. And I told him I was pondering on it, and which I really wasn't, but he kind of went away. I didn't know anything about writing a book. I'd never even thought about it. Didn't know the first thing about what I would do or say. But I started getting this. People were saying you should write a book, and I just kind of put them off. And one day this young fella told me I needed to write a book, and I told him I was pondering on it. And he wrote me back, and he said, no, he says, you're not getting this. He said, you need to write a book. And he said, I know an editor and a publisher and an editor, and I'm gonna get her after you. And so this wonderful lady up in Minnesota, Miss Hillary Jastrom, she called me and we talked an hour and a half on the telephone. And when I got off the phone, I was writing the book. I wrote this book, titled it Ponder On It Pilgrims, and just a collection of stories about my life. But in the tradition of old time storytellers, there was always a moral, always a lesson to be learned from the stories. And I talked about my family, and some of the things I wrote were hard to write, but I did. And
hey, I got to interrupt, Charles. I'm curious, hard in what way? What was it, hard emotionally? Was it hard just reliving some of this? Were there painful things? What made it hard?
Well, in everybody's life, there's times of sadness. There's times of grief. The story of my grandpa, the story of my daddy, had a terrific father, and I lost him, and I just all of this was I was always trying to, you know, to tell people there's different ways of looking at things, you know, and I'm not some ivory tower author of some sort. I'm a guy that's been out here in the trenches, you know, and lived life I was a business owner, but I was a working man. I stayed out with my guys, stayed in the field, and my experiences in the Marine Corps. I didn't get into that, but it was mentioned. People know that I was that I'm a Vietnam veteran. But it was, the stories were personal.
Yes.
About my own life, and so I was kind of laying myself out there.
Sure.
But the book published on April 20th of 22, and it was set up to appear in 18 different genres on Amazon.
Okay.
And within 24 hours, actually within 36 hours to make my whole point, within 36 mm-hmm. hours after it published, I was a best-selling author in 15 of those genres.
Right.
And a number one best-selling author in 3 of them.
Wow.
And the book turned into a number one international bestseller. It was just unbelievable. A three time number one international bestseller.
And is it translated?
No, it's not translated, but it has sold in 26 different countries.
Wow.
On 6 of the 7 continents. No one in Antarctica's bought one yet, but I'm going to have to go down there, I guess, and see if with a few of them, try to sell them if I can find anybody. I make a joke of it, but yeah. I was just flabbergasted. It was just totally incredulous, and then other opportunities started affording themselves. I started getting asked to be on podcasts and different things and speaking engagements. I have an agent now whose job is to get me out there. And wow. like I told you earlier, I'm 78 years old now, and I'm having the time of my life. And I just, you know, and you younger folks out there, I don't, you know, you go through different stages growing old, and I did too. You know, you wonder how it's going to be. Well, it's just like every other stage of your life. It's going to be what you make it, and stay in the game and keep living, you know,
yeah.
Find something you love, something you're passionate about when you retire, and maybe something that gives you a sense of worth, you know, and keep living till you die.
Well, Charles, you mentioned our audience. And so Just Thinking is a podcast designed for educators. Yes. And for people to share what they're just thinking about education. I love the fact that your education and life was not just the formal education you received. It was sitting on your mama's lap. It was just your natural curiosity. Through your entrepreneurial efforts, you had to learn to be able to do the businesses and succeed at the businesses or not, you know, along the way. Mm-hmm. But it would seem that another common thread throughout all this, because you talked about some of the trials in life along the way, the losses, the grief, you know, and your time, you know, serving in Vietnam, which again, you didn't get into deeply in your book, but I'm sure there's lots of stories there as well. there's an element of grit that is necessary throughout this whole journey that you just described. So do you mind speaking a little bit to the grit component of who you are as a person and how that's impacted your life to this awesome stage at 78?
Are you talking about Texas grit that I...
Well, let's talk to you. We can talk Texas grit. Yeah, okay. Sure.
Well, grit, it's hard to define, I think, but it's just tenacity, determination, focus, courage, you know, I'm not a timid, fearful person, and never have been. I'm not a fool, but you know, there's such a thing as fool's courage, and they even talk about it in the service. You know, but to just live life and don't be afraid to hang yourself out in the, as I say, hang my butt out in the wind, and take a chance, not a fool, necessarily a foolish chance, but you have to be willing to take risks. And, I've tried to live that kind of a life. One person asked me, maybe 6 months or so ago, how I would describe myself in one sentence. And that's a tough question, you know, to hit somebody right between the eyes with a question like that. Yeah. And in about the snap of a finger, something popped into my mind and I just said it. And it was the most perfect definition that I could have ever thought of about myself. I told him, I said, I'm an old man struggling not to be an old fool. and he laughed, and I laughed too. But there's a lot more truth in that than you probably would think. You know, wisdom. I talk a lot about wisdom in my book, and the four golden questions, and how it's affected me, brought the concept of wisdom down to the street level, mm-hmm. where people had something to hang their hat on, you know, and making good decisions. But I don't claim to be wise. You're only as wise as your last decision. And I'm capable of being as big a fool as anybody could possibly be and have been from time to time.
I hear you, brother.
But grit, just be, embrace life and live life without being so fearful. Some people never take a chance, you know, and you miss out on a lot, and you'll make mistakes, but some good lessons to be learned from them.
So, Charles, what types of businesses did you build and lead?
We located things buried in the ground.
Okay.
A lot of folks have never stopped to think about all the stuff in the cities and towns, small towns, anywhere you go, up and down the highways. There's stuff buried in the ground everywhere. Mm-hmm. And down where I live in Texas, there's pipelines absolutely everywhere.
Right.
But there's electric lines, gas lines, cable TV lines, telephone lines, I mean, fiber optic cables, I mean, all this stuff is buried in the ground.
Right.
And there's always construction. And before somebody's going to go out there with a backhoe and start trenching somewhere, they need to know what's buried in the ground so it doesn't get damaged. So my company, we were folks that would go out and show them where all the stuff was. And we did a lot of oil field work, locating old pipelines and that sort of thing. So that was my career. Did a few other things earlier in life that didn't amount to a whole lot, but it got me started and gave me some lessons that I learned. But that's what I did, and what I loved about it is it just kept me in touch with real people and the real world. I loved oil field people. It was a lot like being in the Marine Corps, in a lot of respects, just hard-nosed people, no nonsense, and yet the kindest, sweetest men you'd ever want to meet. They'd give you the shirt off their back if they thought you needed it. But they were all business when it came to work. And I love those people. I just loved them. But that was kind of my work life. That's about it.
Well, it kind of connects. You said originally you wanted to be an archaeologist, you end up doing by digging, finding stuff and digging it up. So I think you kind of satisfied your wish a little bit.
It actually crossed my mind that some of these old pipelines that had been in the ground for so long that it made me feel kind of like an archaeologist. But archaeologists, they dig it in the ground looking for stuff, and that was kind of a different twist to my career on it, but there is a similarity.
Charles, I live in Texas now too, and I've been here over 30 years, but I'm originally from Massachusetts. And my parents, got pulled up there in the winter, so we had an oil tank. And the oil tank was buried in the ground behind our home. Mm-hmm. Well, over time, that oil tank no longer was able to function properly. Mm-hmm. So they had another oil tank put in our one-car garage that we never used to park the car in because we had so much junk in there, but they had to put a new tank in. So this tank they put in above ground, but they just kept that other one there buried in the ground. I'm sure eventually when they tore that house down and built a new one, somebody took it out of there and moved it. Yeah. But for the longest time, I remember that big, huge metal tank was just buried in the ground there. So
You won't believe the things that over the years and where they are. There are pipelines running underneath people's houses in some areas of Houston.
Yes.
They built, no one knew the pipelines were there. And they just go in there, build a house. And it's a wonder they didn't, damage it when they were building it. But you find all kinds of things. It was interesting work, and I felt like it was important. Yes. If you've got a 30-inch high-pressure high-pressure gas line running through an area, and they're going to be digging around that thing with backhoes, people die. You hear about it. I mean, we took our work very seriously. The people who were digging, we owed it to them to make sure they understood what we knew. And sometimes it wasn't a perfect system. There were pipelines that you couldn't get a signal on because of the material. But if we, I would, as best I could, try to tell them what I knew and what I thought and try to keep them working safely. We were we considered safety our number one concern, the safety of those men that were going to be digging the hole and standing down in the trenches. We owed them, so I had a lot of personal satisfaction for what I did.
Well, it sounds like the curiosity that you demonstrated on your mama's lap when you were reading out of the encyclopedia of Childcraft? What was
Childcraft.
Childcraft Encyclopedia. I had World Book, I think, but I'm familiar with Childcraft too. But that curiosity and the critical thinking that you demonstrated as a young child on your mama's lap carried through all the way through your career, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. It takes you to right now, even in your retirement and what you're doing right now, having the time of your life writing books and doing a TV show. So I want you to share with our viewers and our listeners a little bit about this TV show, because now you're a TV star on top of everything else. So what's up with that?
Well, after I wrote the book, people started noticing me, and I, you know, was getting invitations for this and that. And one day, this man called me up, and he wanted to know if I wanted to do a TV show. They had started up a new streaming TV channel, Your Home mm-hmm. TV.
Okay.
And he wanted to know if I wanted to have a show. And I said, well, I've never even been on television. I wouldn't have the slightest idea, you know, what to do. And we talked a little bit, and I said, well, what would be your expectations of me? I can, you know, I'm going to have to figure out some way to record this. And, you know, there's a lot of things I just didn't know, but I knew some people. But anyway, I said, what is your expectation? What do you expect of me? Mm-hmm. And he said, we want you to be you.
Nice.
And I said, well, you know, I've been doing that all my life. I mean, I can do that.
And you've had some practice.
So anyway, I set up, a friend had some great cameras and the wherewithal, he knew how to record and do all of this stuff. So I had myself in a rocking chair with a little table beside me, and like I was sitting on the porch, you know, and mm-hmm. I just started talking, and had a subject that I wanted to talk to. And so I recorded 10 episodes of Pilgrims, Ponderonic mm-hmm. Pilgrims, the name of the show. And they have done really well, as I understand. Within 6 months or so, it had about 1.5 million views, and it really, really got popular. And I haven't done anything else with it. I haven't put another show up. I did those 10, and I thought that was enough. Some people just, you know, doing one after the other, and I pretty much had. I said what I had to say, and people will ask me about writing a book sometimes, mm-hmm. and what I would recommend about writing a book. I've never written anything in my life because I felt like I needed to write something, I want to write a book. And then try to decide what I want to write about. I go back to what I said earlier. When this all started, I felt like I had something to say. Mm-hmm. And I tell people, if you want to write a book, write about something that you're passionate about, and have a sense that you want to tell people about something, you know, and at least that's the way it was with me. I was the same way with the TV shows. I felt a certain level of inspiration on 10 of them. Mm-hmm. And after that, I was just trying to think of something else to do. And I just left it at 10. I might decide to do another one someday. I don't know. But
I'm curious. I watched your first episode, by the way. It is outstanding. It's very compelling. I mean, I watched it from beginning to end, and I was just kind of there hanging on to every word that you said throughout it. I am curious on the production side of it. Is that a virtual background or is that a real background in your?
I laugh about it. Everything is fake. I mean, I was sitting there with a green sheet hanging on the wall behind me.
Yes.
And microphones and lights and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And right up in front of me was the lady that was doing the filming. And I just was looking at the camera. And then when I got through recording it, and then they did the editing, I couldn't believe my eyes. What all they'd managed to put in there, but it did capture, you know, an old guy sitting on the front porch of his cabin, pondering on something, you know, and that like I'd been writing about. And so they had the cabin wall behind me and, you know, the critters, and different things, which was all a part of the things that I wrote about. But that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that. I'm looking for speaking engagements now. I've had a few speaking engagements, and just, you know, I just get up and I'm not a professional speaker,
right?
But I just get up and talk about what I have to say, and people have been so kind, and you know, I feel like a good speaker when you get through speaking. I don't want them talking about my speaking,
right?
I want them talking about what I said, and to me that's a successful speech. You don't get in the way of what you're trying to say.
Yes.
And I seem to be getting away with that. I mean, and it really tickles me, because every time I've spoken, people are talking about what I said. And
yes.
And that pleases me. It's all about, you know.
I was going to ask you, I apologize for interrupting, but you mentioned your age, and I am not that far behind you. Actually, I'm 63. And so, but in my 20s, I worked at a place. I taught kids in the day, all day long. And then in the evening, I worked at a senior living center. Mm-hmm. And so these folks were 70s, 80s, 90s, and so forth. And I was really struck by the stories that these individuals had, the wisdom that they had, the just the gifts that they could give to us. And yet, in so many instances, they're sitting in these in their room. Sometimes it comes to the dining room, so forth. And sometimes family wouldn't visit. They didn't have friends come to visit, and so forth. And no one's getting the benefit of the rich treasure that is in the minds of these individuals, that they're so willing to share. If you'll just ask a question or just give them a few minutes of your time to share. Sure. So I love that you're proactively kind of going out there. And if people did want to contact you, what's the best way to contact you to come speak?
The best thing to do would just be go to my website,
okay.
CharlesHamm.com.
That's easy.
That's easy to all run together. Charles Ham with two M's. CharlesHam.com. Okay. And on my website, there's a page where you can contact us. Or you could, if you're on LinkedIn, you could message me on LinkedIn. I'm available there. But going to my website, I'd like for you to go to my website anyway to see. You'll learn a lot more about me. They've done a really good job, the ladies that did my website. I think they did, and you can learn about the book there. And I'm really enjoying public speaking, and having a chance to talk about these things and not just write them. And just like I say, I'm just having a great time meeting so many wonderful people. And I don't know what my vision was for retirement, but a lot of it was just, you know, hunting and fishing and sitting in a rocking chair on my front porch and just relaxing. But it turned into a lot more than that. And I think maybe it was my age. You know, I've had a lot of experiences and I've picked up a few things along the way. It seemed one of the things I tried to tell people was everybody was upset about things that they couldn't do anything about. Mm. And that was the first thing I started trying to point out to them. You know, why drive yourself crazy and make yourself miserable because of what's going on somewhere else that you don't have any control in this world over? Draw yourself into your own life and make it a good one. You know, I tell people, you know, they say a better world begins with me. Well, one of my sayings is I tell people, you're never going to make everybody in the world love everybody else, but you can.
Nice.
You know,
nice.
Start there. You want everybody to just love everybody. Everybody talks about loving and hating. These words get thrown around. And you know, you can do something about you.
Yes.
One of the things I learned in life was that it was always me in the end. It always came back to me. And decisions that I made, whether they were good or bad. And you don't blame other people. You own your own life. And that's the ultimate freedom. Mm. That means that nobody else can interject themselves into your life without your permission and make you angry, or do anything. Somebody could do something that could make you angry, but whether you become angry is a choice. I just started feeling offended. We live in a world, it seems like people want to be offended. And I tell people, there's no way in the world that someone can offend you. They could say something offensive, something ugly, but you have to choose to feel offended,
right?
It's your choice, and who wants to feel offended? Who wants to be angry? You know, just take a hold of your life and take responsibility for your life. That's the essence of my message. Do I have time to talk about the four golden questions?
Well, what I wanted to do, okay. This is actually a good segue, is Generally, what I do toward the end of the podcast, and I can already tell, okay, Charles, we're going to have to do like a part two, a part three, and maybe even a part four on the podcast. Well, but for the purposes of today's episode, I always round out the episode by asking you the question, is there anything else, Charles, about which you're just thinking that I did not give you the opportunity to address? And I think you just touched on it. But I'm not going to ask you, is there anything else you're just thinking, even though that's the title of this podcast. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you, is there anything else about which you're just pondering that you did not get a chance to address during the course of this podcast? So okay, what would that be? You get the last word.
It'll be a perfect way to set up our next call.
All right, that's good.
The four golden questions. I want to talk about the four golden questions, and I want to talk about the golden triad.
Okay.
And that's all I'm going to say about it right now.
So you're leaving us with a cliffhanger, Charles.
Well, that's what you wanted me to do, isn't it?
Now we have to watch the next episode or listen to the next episode. So, well, Charles,
the four golden questions will change your life.
Oh man,
you'll never be the same. It's the essence of my message to my fellow man, as an old man looking back and trying to say something that might be helpful to folks. This will turn your life upside down.
Well, Charles, I can't wait to hear those four golden questions and ponder on them myself. I want to thank you for your time on today's podcast. I want to thank you for your years of service. Those are never taken lightly and never disregarded. So I want to thank you for that. And I want to thank you for your spirit of hope that you just represent and embody, and you being you, as that gentleman said to you about speaking, that just you be you. And it's been great getting to know you on this first podcast, and I look forward to the next one, Charles. So thanks so much.
Been an honor to be with you.
To be continued.
Yes, sir.